Let's go ahead and begin another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word. We are spending a little time talking about the Jewish-Roman relationships that deteriorated and then blew up as part of the fulfillment of Jesus' prophecies in the Olivet Discourse and the destruction of the temple and the destruction of Jerusalem and pretty much the end of the Jewish state in that time period. And we talked about how this really is quite complex. There's a lot of nuances that get jumped over too often, and that it really had started out as an alliance all the way back in the time of Judas Maccabee in 160. But we've got some hiccups along the way. Even though there was supposed to be protection of Jewish religious rights, the last time that we were together, we were talking about how when Caligula came into power, he got angry that the Jewish people would not treat him as a god on earth like the Gentile peoples around the world did, and he demanded that a golden image of himself be placed into the Jewish temple at Jerusalem. And there was a lot of back and forth about that between the legate of Syria that was supposed to get that done and the Jewish people that were begging him not to do it, and then communication with Rome and trying to convince the young emperor this is a bad idea. We even get Herod Agrippa Sr. that's involved in this, who finally convinces his friend Caligula this is a bad idea. It's not what Jews work with. And so Caligula had originally said, okay, fine, forget about it, don't do it. But then he got the letter of a second appeal from Legate Petronius, and that really made him mad again. And so he sent him an order back probably in the winter of 41 going into 42, 40 going into 41. When you get this letter, kill yourself. But Caligula was assassinated in January of 41. Claudius becomes the new emperor with the assistance of his friend Agrippa I, and things go back to the way they were supposed to be, where there is an alliance between the Jewish people and the Roman people. In fact, Claudius actually declares his friend Agrippa I king of the Jews, restoring the semi-independent Jewish Hasmonean kingdom of old. And that is where we closed up last session, where I was reading to you from the official documents to calm things down in the year following the Caligula craziness. And that's exactly what it was. Let me read to you again from the letter sent to Alexandria, Egypt, where there was a lot of problems during this crisis. And this is what Emperor Claudius says in regard to relationships between Jews and Gentiles in Alexandria. Quote, in the time of Caius, the Alexandrians became insolent toward the Jews that were among them, which Caius, that's Caligula, by the way, out of his great madness, so notice the characterization that this was a big deviation from the norm, and of want of understanding, reduced the nation of the Jews very low, because they would not transgress the religious worship of their country and call him a god. So clearly, Claudius is highlighting this as the problem. This was the key issue, is that Caligula was crazy and didn't understand the relationship that the Jewish people had with their religion. Continuing in the quote, "I will, therefore, that the nation of the Jews be not deprived of their rights and privileges on account of the madness of Gaius." So I'm going to break in again. Those rights and privileges have been the Jewish people's ever since the time of Julius Caesar and before. Their religious rights were protected by Roman law. Let's finish the quote. "But that those rights and privileges which they formerly enjoyed be preserved to them, and that they may continue in their own customs. And I charge both parties to take very great care that no troubles may arise after the promulgation of this edict." And so he figured this should take care of it. Just a little reminder to the people in Alexandria, respect the Jewish people and their rights, because that's the way it's supposed to be in the first place. Ignore what happened with Caligula because he was crazy. But then a little reminder to the Jewish people, and you need to respect the religious rights of your fellow Alexandrians who do not share your Jewish faith. Now, let me read to you a more specifically directed letter to the Jewish people in Judea, actually in all of the Jewish homelands, written right around the same time. I'm going to read the full letter to you because I think there's some things in here that'll help you understand how publication of Roman edicts took place. "Tiberius Claudius Caesar Augustus Germanicus, high priest, tribune of the people, chosen consul the second time, ordains this." So that's his long drawn out name. The high priest here is basically Pontifex Maximus. It was the Roman religion high priesthood that belonged to the emperor. Now to the meat of the matter. "Upon the petition of King Agrippa and King Herod," now the Agrippa here is Agrippa Senior, Agrippa I. King Herod is his brother, who is the king of Chalcis, which is north of the Jewish homelands, "who are persons very dear to me, that I would grant the same rights and privileges should be preserved to the Jews which are in all the Roman Empire, which I've granted to those of Alexandria. I very willingly comply therewith, and this grant I make no other for the sake of the petitioners, but as judging those Jews for whom I have been petitioned worthy of such a favor on account of their fidelity and friendship to the Romans." So did you hear that? He is reaching back into the history between the Jews and the Romans, saying, we need to get back to the way it was, and I'm quite happy to help my friends, the Jewish kings Agrippa and Herod, to insist everybody respect the rights of the Jews within the empire. Continuing in the quote, "I think it very just that no Grecian city should be deprived of such rights and privileges, since they were preserved to them under the great Augustus. It will therefore be fit to permit the Jews who are in all the world under us to keep their ancient customs without being hindered so to do, and I do charge them also to use this my kindness to them with moderation, and not to show a contempt of the superstitious observances of other nations, but to keep their own laws only." So again, the Jewish people have their rights all over the empire, and especially in their own homeland, but so do the Greeks or the Gentiles. And the Jewish people need to respect their religious observances. Let them have their freedom of worship. And then it finishes, "And I will that this decree of mine be engraven on tables by the magistrates of the cities and colonies and municipal places, both those within Italy and those without it, both kings and governors, by the means of the ambassadors, and to have them exposed to the public for a full 30 days in such a place where it may be plainly read from the ground," end quote. And so now you understand how laws, how decrees were disseminated over the entire empire. They were posted for a 30-day period on tablets of bronze in very high-profile public places. And since the majority of the people could read, then all of this information would be passed to the entire public. And so that is how things stood in the year 42 in our study. Now, let's talk about the kingdom of Agrippa I. It did not last very long. And you remember, he was a bit of a wastrel earlier in his life, but apparently now that he has money and he's paid off his debts and he has authority, he seems to start taking his leadership quite seriously. And one of the things he definitely takes in hand is the belief that he needs to be a protector of all things Jewish. And so that is why we see him in the scripture being the guy who begins the persecution of the church again, specifically the leaders. In Acts chapter 12, we are told that Agrippa arrested, tried, and executed by beheading James the Apostle. That's the brother of John the Apostle. That seems to indicate that they were Roman citizens, by the way, because that was a special privilege if you're going to be executed, that it was quick. After he saw that this made the Jewish people who were anti-Jesus very happy, he arrested Peter and had apparently already put him on trial and was getting ready to execute him by crucifixion, since Peter is not a Roman citizen. And then God steps in and helps Peter to escape the fate of James. That all happened in the spring of 44. And we know from the Acts account and from the writings of Josephus that Agrippa then went down to Caesarea. And it seems that he was going down there for the 14th edition of the Augustus Games and the 10th edition of the Kaiser Games. Because remember, these are every 5 years since the time of Herod the Great and Augustus Caesar. And there's a lot of visitors that come in from all over the Roman Empire for this. And Herod Agrippa had gone to what appears to be the opening ceremonies for these games at Caesarea. And he is greeted by the crowd with acclamations of his godhood. Now, that's interesting considering just a few years earlier we had the whole Caligula debacle. Well, to understand the story better, Agrippa came into the theater dressed up in an outfit that had been woven out of silver thread. And the sun hit his clothing and he shone very brightly. And the people were quite taken aback by this, but they were also fawning all over him in the custom of trying to get royals on your side. "It's the voice of a god, not of a man," they said. And then a messenger of God struck him down. Now, when Josephus tells the story, the messenger is actually an owl that lands on a rope, one of the guy ropes, apparently, in the theater over his head, which was something he had been warned earlier in his life when he saw that it would be the end of his kingdom and of his life. And exactly as that, because of his blasphemy of accepting worship that was not due him, he died. And that ended the very brief revival of the Hasmonean kingdom. Because When Emperor Claudius was informed a few weeks later that Agrippa had died suddenly, he initially thought of declaring Agrippa's 17-year-old son, Agrippa II, or Agrippa Jr., as the new king of the Jews. However, Agrippa II was only 17 years of age at that time. He was living at Rome, as had been the custom within the Herodian family for several generations now. He was being raised in the royal precinct, in the imperial palace, part of the royal family almost. And because he was so young still, the advisors to Emperor Claudius said, no, we need somebody with strength and experience taking care of things in that region of the world. And so Claudius finally did agree and redesignated the kingdom of the late Agrippa I as a Roman prefecture under the oversight of the legate of Syria. So we kind of reverse back to what we were before Agrippa I came to power. The first procurator of the Jews of this period was a guy by the name of Cuspius Fadus, and he seems to have served a 2-year term. Now, when Fadus arrived in later 44, he seems to have got it into his head that he needed to take a firm hand with the Jewish people because some of them were still acting on their own as if they still were under a Jewish king. They would instantly strike back against any Gentiles in neighboring regions or borders that had violated their rights. So Procurator Fadus revoked the privilege of the Jewish people having control over the high priest uniform, which had been given back to them about 8 years earlier. He also went around dealing with the various messianic cults that were rising up at this time. Remember, this was actually part of Jesus' prophecy in the Olivet Discourse, that this would be a period between his words in 33 and the destruction of the temple in 70, that during that period, there would be many false Christs and many false prophets. And so Fadus was running up against these Jewish religious movements, and some of them were quite problematic. He ended up executing a false prophet by the name of Theudas. Now, in 45, shortly after Procurator Fadus announced some of his changes in policy, the Syrian legate Longinus came to Jerusalem for a state visit, and he brought with himself a fairly decent military entourage, apparently because he was concerned that Fadus's new hardline attitude might prompt some nasty, hard response from some of the Jews. When he arrived, the Jews appealed through him for the uniform decree to be reversed. But instead of legate Longinus just simply reversing Fadus's decision, it was sent to Claudius in order for him to make the decision. Now, in Rome, when Claudius was given this appeal from the Jewish people, Herod Agrippa II, who is 17 and living in Rome and part of the royal palace, he appeals to the emperor to let them have their uniform again. The brother, Chalcis, that is Herod Agrippa's uncle, Chalcis, the king of Chalcis, who is the brother of the late Herod Agrippa I, he asks that the custody of the Temple Mount itself and the appointment of the high priest be given to him. Now, that is interesting because these guys are all descendants of Miriamne, the last Hasmonean princess. And so they are part of the royal family, the direct line that had been in place since the 2nd century BC. Well, Claudius granted all of those requests. And we have a record of another letter that was sent out in 45. And this is the key core of it that I want to read to you. Upon the representation of your ambassadors to me by Agrippa, my friend, now that's Agrippa Jr., whom I have brought up and have now with me, and who is a person of very great piety, who are come to give me thanks for the care that I have taken of your nation, and to entreat me in an earnest and obliging manner that they may have the holy vestments with the crown belonging to them under their power. So that's the high priest uniform. The crown that's being referenced here is the little gold plate on the front of the uniform turban, which says, Kodesh Yahweh, holy to he who is. Back to the text. I grant their request, as that excellent person Vitellius, who is very dear to me, had done before me. So that's the guy that originally had given the right of the uniform back to the Jews. And I have complied with your desire in the first place out of regard to that piety which I profess, and because I would have everyone worship God according to the laws of their own country. So there you have again a clear indication of the attitude of the Romans in general toward religious freedom. The idea that as long as everybody behaves themselves, they should have the ability to worship God according to the dictates of their heart. And so Jewish people in particular had special protections because they had unique aspects of their faith. The rest of the note. And this I do also because I shall hereby highly gratify King Herod and Agrippa Jr., whose sacred regards to me and earnest goodwill to you I am well acquainted with, and with whom I have the greatest friendship, and whom I highly esteem and look on as a person of the best, persons of the best character. Now, I have written about these affairs to Cuspius Fadus, my procurator. And so that's the letter that was sent in 45 that made sure that all the religious freedoms, all the religious protections for the Jewish people were put back in place and kept inviolate there at Jerusalem, including the uniform being in the custody of the Jewish people and the choice of high priests and the protection of the Temple Mount precincts. All that is in the hands of a Jewish person. Herod of Chalcis. In 46, we get a new procurator. This one's kind of interesting. His name is Tiberius Julius Alexander. He's actually Jewish, but he's not a religious Jew. He is a completely secular Jew. He has totally sworn off Judaism as a religion. And so he is sent as the new procurator of the Jews in 46, and he serves a two-year term. During his time, there is a sabbatical year. And during his time, James and Simon, the sons of the late Judas the Galilean, who caused trouble way back in AD 6, they were now causing trouble, just like their dad. They end up being arrested, tried, and executed for insurrection. And that's in 47. In 48, we have a new guy that arrives. His name is Cumanus, and he apparently serves a four-year term. During his first year, in 48, Herod of Chalcis dies. And his nephew, Agrippa II, receives his kingdom. And that included custody over the Temple Mount. And that will bring us then to the year 51, where we have our next big difficulty. And this one really starts lighting the fuse that things are going to blow up from. At Passover in 51, there was a Roman soldier on patrol duty on the upper deck of the portico that surrounded the court of the Gentiles, the court of the nations, on the Temple Mount. And he's supposed to be there as an auxiliary security force backing up the Jewish security force that provides overwatch of the Jewish worshipers at Passover. Well, this guy takes it upon himself to mockingly moon some of the Jewish worshipers down below and to make some rude comments that went along with it. When the Jewish pilgrims started reacting to this by proclaiming that Cumanus, the procurator, ordered that this insulting thing be done, Cumanus responds by telling them, you need to knock that off because I did not. I did not order this done. You need to stop accusing me of insulting your religion. When they wouldn't quit and they kept insisting that it's all his fault, he brought more soldiers to Jerusalem in full armor. And when the pilgrims saw this reaction force, saw this this new Roman surge militarily, a lot of them panicked and started trying to run out of the temple all at the same time, and they crowded into the gates, and 20,000 Jewish people died in that stampede. And this is where we will take up the story of the deteriorating Roman-Jewish relationship next time.